Hola, Sue. I'd like to add a little addendum to the speed drive through all of the philosophical schools of last Saturday. Just the icing on the cake. And then we'll go right to practice, but I think we'll see they're quite closely related, actually. I mentioned, as a culmination of this progression along these four philosophical schools, or really ways of viewing reality, Vaibhashika, Satrantika, Chittamatra, mind only. All of this was initiated by Ilse's question about Chittamatra, or mind-only school, and then beyond that, the middle way school, or the Madhyamaka. It's widely held that when one gains, and it comes also back to a question from Ilse about non-conceptual experience, when one gains a non-dual, non-conceptual, conceptually unmediated realization or experience of emptiness. It's said that when you become immersed in that state of meditative equipoise, nyamsha eshe, that all appearances vanish. You can be sitting there with your eyes open, your ears open, and the appearances vanish not because you're going into deep samadhi. That's one very easy way. I mean, relatively speaking, just withdraw your senses into the substrate, appearances vanish. And that's been done for thousands of years. But here's something different. And that is, you are indeed going into samadhi, but the appearances vanish not because you're withdrawing from them, but because you're withdrawing conceptual designations upon them. If you've understood, especially the Prasangika Madhyamaka view, which is widely regarded as the pinnacle of Buddhist philosophy in this Indo-Tibetan current, then you'll recall that all phenomena, subjective and objective, arise independent upon conceptual designation. When the conceptual designation doesn't happen, phenomena don't arise. And so Genlam Rinpa, the yogi who was really very, very adept and had deeply experienced in such vipassana practice, meditation on emptiness, he says when you completely cease all conceptual designation, phenomena vanish. Now, when you not only cease all conceptual designation, but you gain a realization of emptiness, and that goes non-conceptual. So you can go non-conceptual just by being comatose, but that's not absolutely. Just as when you go into the substrate consciousness, it's not absolutely non-conceptual. When you gain the non-conceptual realization of emptiness, then all appearances, subjective and objective, all conventional, all relative appearances dissolve, and all appearances to the mind dissolve then not just into the substrate, they dissolve into Dhammata, ultimate reality, into emptiness, into nirvana. It's only when that occurs that one becomes sotapan. Sotapan as in stream enterer. Now, in the Sanskrit-based literature, they point out something I think very helpful, because from the Pali literature, one can imagine, and with good reason, that you just go directly from ordinary person to bam, sotapan, stream enterer. And one get that impression because so many times, it wasn't just once or twice, the Buddha would give some short discourse many, many times. And at the end of the discourse, a person would achieve sotapan. And you think, boy, that couldn't be too hard. It wasn't so hard listening to the lecture. By the Buddha, it might have been hard accruing all the merit for thousands and thousands of lifetimes before having the fortune to meet with the Buddha and receiving teaching directly from a Buddha. We'll return to that this afternoon because Malcolm's question is still waiting in the aisle here. Coming back to the Sanskrit-based tradition, this is why they speak even for the Shravakayana, that is the path of one's own individual liberation, resulting in stream entry, once returner, non-returner, and arhat, that they show that there's a sequence of paths, not the true, not the noble marga, not the arya marga, but paths prior to that, the path of accumulation. So you don't find this in the Pali literature, you do find it in Sanskrit. The shravaka, the person who's seeking his own liberation, the path of accumulation, laying the foundation of powerful renunciation, gaining samadhi, beginning to gain some deep insight into the four satipatthana, proceeding from there onto the path of preparation, and gaining some insights, still veiled or mediated by concepts, Nevertheless, though, authentic insights into the nature of emptiness, into the nature of nirvana. Proceeding along that path of meditation, of preparation, then when one achieves the path of seeing, darshana marga, the path of seeing, reaching that path is simultaneous with becoming a stream enterer, and that occurs only when you have this absolutely conceptually unmediated, non-dual realization of nirvana. So all phenomena, all the appearances to the mind, they all dissolve, again, not into the substrate, that's just shamatha, they all dissolve into dhammata, ultimate reality, shunyata, emptiness, or nirvana. Now, what is the nature of the mind with which you're apprehending it? It's still the mind you were born with, the mind that arises and passes, the mind that is conditioned, the mind that is impermanent. It's that mind. And so you're still realizing, as the adiya does, on this, as the stream enterer, and beyond that, beyond the path of seeing, then there's a path of meditation, where you deepen and deepen, and so there's an ongoing purification process. As you follow the path of meditation, you gradually become once-returner, non-returner, and then come to the fifth path, which is the path of no more training. That's when you become an arhat. But phenomena then along that vipassana path, they dissolve into emptiness, and the mind with which one apprehends it is the continuum you were born with, right? So you're still realizing it with a coarse or a subtle mind, but not realizing it from the perspective of rikpa, or the unconditioned mind that the Buddha referred to as that which is left over when the arhat dies, when there's nirvana without remainder. Lakme, lame nyamde. So what does Dzogchen have to offer beyond that? I would suggest the following as a metaphor, strong metaphor, but only a metaphor or analogy. And that is, imagine being once again in the midst of a non-lucid dream, having a guru in the non-lucid dream who give you teachings on the Madhyamaka view, the middle way view, and the Vipassana that goes together with it, and you gradually gain a clearer and clearer insight as you achieve the path of accumulation, the path of preparation, within the dream and realizing the non-inherent nature of objective phenomena, of subjective phenomena, and how finally within this non-lucid dream, let's imagine, you gain a non-conceptual realization of emptiness. Right? Now it's just within the dream. All you've realized is the emptiness of dream phenomena, right? So it's not the big emptiness, it's a little microcosm emptiness. But imagine you realize that, and then you settle and you just stop. You just stop. You stop all conceptualizations and you just meditate on the total absence of inherent nature of all phenomena within the dream. All appearances will vanish. And just within the dream, what would you realize? Bearing in mind, this is not true emptiness, this is just the emptiness of dreams. You'd realize the substrate. You realize the substrate. It's not big emptiness, right? And you, even as you're realizing the substrate, you may very well not know that you're actually dreaming. You're just realizing this vacuity. Now let's go back to the dream and imagine someone within the dream, now a Dzogchen master, seeing, oh, you've achieved shamatha, have you? You've achieved vipassana, have you? Good, you're ready now to be introduced to the Dzogchen view. Here's the view of the great perfection. Here's the meditation. Here's the way of life. And then you get your sublime Dzogchen master. And you request, please give me pointing out instructions. Please point out to me the essential nature, the ultimate nature of my own awareness. And imagine such a being does so. And right there in the midst of that dream, and of course you never knew you were dreaming, in the midst of that dream, you get it. There is that transmission. You get it. There is an opening. And you recognize in the dream, I'm dreaming. And suddenly your whole perspective on the dream has shifted. You're not simply seeing the emptiness of that and the emptiness of this. You're now viewing it from an entirely different perspective. You're viewing the dream from the perspective of being awake. And you know that the person within the dream, who is reborn into the dream, is just a caricature, a figment, a creation. But you know you are not that person. That is just a display. And you're viewing the whole dream and the emptiness of all the phenomena in the dream from the perspective of waking consciousness. You are in the dream, but you're awake. When you first get it, now a number of you here, even in these last 7 weeks, have already had lucid dreams. And you know that you may be lucid, but you also know how limited your lucidity is, right? Such a gradient. So are you lucid? And that is within the dream, if somebody comes up to you and says, do you know you're dreaming? It says, yes, I know I'm dreaming. Can you walk through that wall? Maybe, maybe not. I might get stuck, you know? So you fathom it, but you know there's more work to do. Now imagine within this lucid dream, but not completely lucid. But you are lucid, right? Maybe you can fly, but you can't walk through a wall. Maybe you can transform. One of my students wrote to me a long lucid dream she'd had recently. She said she could get everything in the dream to transform just by designating it differently. She got everything to transform except her sister. Her sister was real, right? What can you do with a sister? I mean, I have a sister. She's pretty real for me. I can't turn her into a duck or into a polar bear. I mean, she's my sister, for heaven's sakes, you know? She's really my sister. And so, yes, but there was still limitation. Some still reification, demazimbayore, some grasping. But now imagine from within that, then you decide, enough of this. I really am lucid, even if not thoroughly lucid. I'm now going to stop, and I'm going to practice non-meditation. And with your eyes wide open, ears, you're practicing not withdrawal into your substrate. You're practicing open presence. But with the realization of emptiness and having realized you are, in fact, dreaming, now you practice open presence. You completely stop. But you're wide open. Now you slip into the substrate consciousness. But you'll not merely be perceiving the substrate. You will perceive, since you are lucid, you'll slip into the dreamless sleep, and you'll know you're sleeping, and you are awake, and there are no appearances. And all you're experiencing then, from the waking perspective, knowing that you're asleep, is the non-duality of your own substrate consciousness and substrate. Now you dwell on that, you percolate, you brew. What do you do with soup when you just keep it on the stove for a long time and it gets really well cooked, right? You brew it, and then you deliberately break the symmetry, because this is homogeneous, right? Know this and that. You deliberately break the symmetry, and you come out of this non-dual experience of substrate consciousness. You return to the dream, but now having saturated yourself in that from which all the dream phenomena arise, as you re-emerge to the dream, it becomes increasingly clear and finally absolutely clear and totally, thoroughly clear that everything in the dream, from the most nightmarish dream of the deepest hell realm to the most sublime dream of the most exalted pure land, that all of these are of one taste equally, equally pure, equally simply displays of substrate consciousness. So imagine that in the waking state. There's the parallel. Imagine in the waking state, you've gained non-dual realization of emptiness, non-conceptual, you rest in that, all appearances dissolve, and you realize emptiness, nirvana, from the perspective of not being awake yet. But you are realizing emptiness. And then you emerge in the waking state, you get pointing out instructions. You are introduced to the view, meditation, way of life of Dzogchen. You're given pointing out instructions. And then you see, you see in the waking state that you are Rigpa. You are primordial consciousness. You are Buddha. Your mind is nothing other than and has never been other than Buddha mind, Dharmakaya. You know it. And you're walking through this dream now, not dream-like. From Vipassana perspective, Madhyamaka perspective, this is dream-like. But now from Dzogchen perspective, this isn't dream-like. This, relative to your awareness, is a dream. That's why the Buddha said, I am awake, and I am not a man. I'm not a man within your dream. That's what you see. From my perspective, I am not a man. Because I know this is that caricature, that figment, that appearance is not me. It's just a display within the dream that you call reality, but I am awake, you would realize within the waking state, this is in fact a dream from the perspective to which you have now broken through, texture, from which you have broken through, and you're viewing this reality from that perspective. You're seeing the dreamlike nature from an awakened perspective. And then you go into non-meditation. Sustaining that awareness, that identification of pristine awareness that is non-dual from your own identity, the very nature of your own awareness, of your own being. Sustaining that, having ascertained it, sustaining that in a radical not doing, all appearances dissolve. Even while practicing open presence, all senses open, not withdrawing from any appearances. Beyond the realization of emptiness, you are now viewing all appearances from enlightened perspective, but with this utterly, how would you say, absolute absence of activity, all appearances dissolve into Dhamma Dhatu, absolute space of phenomena, into Dhammata, into emptiness, into Nirvana. But now, because you are awake, the awareness with which you apprehend the Dhamma Dhatu, in this total absence of all phenomenal appearances, the awareness with which you apprehend it is Dhammakaya, Rigpa, pristine awareness, Yeshe, primordial consciousness. While resting in that utterly transcendent state of primordial non-duality, of primordial consciousness in the absolute space of phenomena, you're now fathoming the great perfection. And imagine as you do so, all conceptual veils vanish and you become Vidyadhara, a holder of Rigpa. Vidya meaning Sanskrit translation or of Rigpa, corresponding term of Rigpa, Rigpa's translation from Vidya. You rest now as a Vidyadhara and then you deliberately break the symmetry now as a Vidyadhara, having achieved the first four stages of Dzogchen. You break the symmetry and you emerge and once again are aware of the display of all phenomena, subjective and objective. And now with radiant clarity, you see for your own experience that all appearances, again, now in the waking state, in all realms of existence, from Vajra hell, from Avicii hell, all the way up to Tushita and Sukhavati and so forth, all the pure realms, that all of these, the whole of samsara and nirvana, all of these are equally of one taste. They're simply displays of your own Rigpa, of your own pristine awareness, emerging from Dhamma Dhatu, the absolute space of phenomena. They are all equally pure from this vantage point, equally pure, of one taste, with no preference for nirvana over samsara, over pleasant abodes in samsara, over unpleasant abodes in samsara. One taste, absolute equality. So from that point, then you become a Buddha in non-abiding nirvana, neither immersed in samsara nor immersed in nirvana, but seeing the two of one taste, simultaneously apprehending both. And there is the full flowering of what is called jitawa kenbe yeshe, the knowledge, the primordial consciousness of phenomena as they are, knowing reality as it is, that is, all phenomena being empty, all phenomena arising equally as effulgence or displays of Rigpa, Dhamma Dhatu. On the one hand, jinye kyenbe yeshe, the knowledge, the primordial consciousness of the full range of phenomena, a phenomenological awareness of all manner of existence. And then you become a Buddha. So that's the culmination of this path. So it's philosophy, as truly a love of wisdom. Voilà, so obviously this morning session is already 20 minutes longer than normal, but this is after all our last week And I'd like this for me, but now speaking very selfishly, I'd like at the end of the week to have no regrets, feeling, oh, I should have told them this, and now they're all gone. What to do? Too late. The contextualization of Dzogchen is of enormous importance. And very, very often now, as Dzogchen, together with all schools of Buddhism, have become popularized, and pardon the term, but commodified. Because after all, we have to pay to go to retreats. We have to pay to receive Dharma teachings. It's just the way the world is. It's not a criticism, but it is a fact. You have to rent halls, you have to administration, and so forth and so on. And in light of what's happened to these great traditions in modernity, what happens very, very often, it happens for Vipassana all the time. It happens for Vajrayana all the time. It happens for Mahamudra and Dzogchen all the time. It happens for Zen all the time. It's not to say there are not wonderful teachers for all those traditions, because there are, and the wonderful teachers contextualize. They embed these noble, profound teachings within the broader framework. They don't just pick it up with tweezers. They don't take out Zen practice or Vipassana or Dzogchen, pick it up with tweezers out of its bed, and just plunk it down into your mind and say, it'll work wonders, as if it's some kind of a wonder drug, like a med. You know, just take a meditation, as soon as it touches your tongue, you'll experience Rigpa. Forget about it. So medication and meditation are all too similar. Only a T and a C, you know, separate the two words. And so pointing out instructions, who wouldn't like to go to a great lama, sit in that lama's presence, and simply have the lama give you a mind-to-mind transmission and point out your Rigpa? Such lamas are getting rarer and rarer, I believe. I think the evidence is there. But even if you should receive it, even if you should go up to the Himalayas or back into the recesses of Tibet, where there's some extraordinary masters back there, and receive pointing out instructions and get the taste, get a glimmering, and you don't have shamatha, and you don't have vipassana, and you don't have the Dzogchen view, then you'll get it, you'll get this little, it'll open, and then it'll close right back, and you'll be left with a memory. Be left with a memory. I'm going to go on for a few 4 minutes. After all, there's no dinner. Some of you know the story of a woman who went utterly psychotic and in a sustained fashion. Very, very tragic. She'd taken a lot of illegal drugs, the LSD and who knows what. She just pumped her brain full of all kinds of illegal drugs. It had nothing to do with meditation. And she got to Dharamsala and she just went completely psychotic and not happy. The devil was inside of her. She babbled incessantly. I mean, this woman was just flat out, what do you say, just crazy and painfully crazy. And so I got to know her because somebody brought her to Dr. Yeshu Dundan's clinic, and I was the liaison, I was the interpreter, so she wound up on my doorstep. But there she was. She was very tragic, German, young German woman. And she didn't want to take the medicine. I don't know if it would even help. So old friend of mine, I'm just about positive, was Gavin. It was a long time ago, Gavin Kilty, old buddy. This must have been about 1972, maybe early three. I think 1972. Didn't know what to do with her. Her boyfriend ditched her as soon as she went crazy. She was pregnant, she'd broken a hip. It was reset incorrectly because she broke her hip in Afghanistan. I mean, she was just a really tragic hippie. You know, such a sad case. And now she was completely crazy and kind of suicidal. And so Gavin and I took one hand, I took the other hand, and we went down to see if maybe she could receive some blessing from Kepchi Tijin Rinpoche, the great, great saint, great holy man, one of the tutors of the Dalai Lama, but he was in retreat. Then we thought Geshe Ngawang Taiki himself, maybe he could give some blessing, because nothing else works, you know, nothing else works. And there were no medical doctors, no psychiatrists, no meds. Oh, it would have been fantastic to have an antipsychotic medication. That would have been fantastic. We didn't have any in Dharamsala. This was almost 40 years ago. And so we went to Geshe Ngawang Taiki. He wasn't there. His interpreter, Shapa Rinpoche, we bumped into him, said, here's this, she's babbling and babbling, we're just holding her, you know, make sure she wouldn't run away and kill herself. And we went to Shapa Rinpoche, the young monk who was the interpreter for Geshe Ngawang Taiki, said, is there anything you can do? I mean, this woman is, you can see. And he said, okay, just a minute, maybe something. And he came back, and he had a little bag, a little cloth bag, and this was of relics, of little pieces of thread, like little cloth from lama's robes, maybe some hair, some nails, just little stuff that had blessing from a lama, from various lamas. And he had a little bag of this, and he said, well, Let's try this. So he took out, as I recall, Gavin can corroborate this. Maybe you'll see him, Mervyn, when you go home. He brought out something a little metal thing to put. He took a pinch out of his little bag, put it on it, and then he lit a fire. He took a match and lit this little pinch of this relics. And again, it's stuff like threads and little. It looks like something you'd pick up with a vacuum sweeper off the floor. It really was not attractive. But he put it there, and then he lit it on fire, and soon it was on fire, he blew it out, and then this woman did blah, 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 she didn't know what's going on. And then immediately he took this now smoldering, because now the smoke, that was the whole point, get the smoke, and he took this, and he just put it in front of her nose and said, breathe. And she could understand some, and so she breathed in. It was utterly amazing. You see her face 5 seconds before, and you're looking at the face of a madwoman. She breathed in. It was like one big sniff. Her face suddenly became relaxed, completely at ease. Her eyes became kind of normal, and she was just quiet. Seconds passed, and it was seconds, not minutes. 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And then you saw almost like the vibration coming in. She's losing it. And she knew she was losing it. And as she was losing it, she said, do that again. For a moment, everything was okay. That I've seen myself. He didn't have enough to just keep her inhaling, having her inhaling smoke forever. That was not a solution. But it was remarkable to see this. To call that placebo effect, I don't think so. She didn't know what's going on. She didn't know. She's sniffing. It's just smoke. But for everything, she said, for a moment, everything was okay. And then she slipped right out. And she was as crazy as she was before. So it gave her a little glimpse of sanity. And then it was gone. And so, not long after that, she was taken down to Delhi and went home, and I hope she had good treatment. That is an analogy. That if your mind is crazed with obsessive, compulsive delusion or disorder, grasping onto the impermanent as permanent, that which is not happiness, that which is of the nature of dukkha as being happiness, that which is not self as self, reifying everything, completely non-lucid with respect to everything, swimming in an ocean of ignorance and delusion, spouting off like a whale spouting off attachment and hostility, envy and pride, a pretty tragic case, from the Buddhist perspective, frankly, completely insane. And you should get pointing out instructions. For a moment, everything's okay. And then the clouds come in. And you're back to where you were with a really wonderful memory. That's Dzogchen without context. So a lot of people are attracted to Dzogchen. I am not attracted. I am utterly, absolutely in love with Dzogchen. I'm not attracted to Dzogchen. It's a total passion for Dzogchen. But what makes this Dzogchen view, the meditation, the way of life, what is it about this simple practice of open presence or non-meditation so radically transformative? The non-meditation itself, sitting like a marmot. How is it not like a marmot? Because you're sitting imbued with a view. You're sitting in on meditation, and that whole practice is taking place within the way of life of Dzogchen. And that Dzogchen view, meditation, and way of life is based upon some insight, preferably realization of emptiness. And that realization of emptiness is sustained with stability and clarity with the power of shamatha. And the shamatha arises from a profoundly ethical way of life. In that context, Dzogchen really is the grand culmination, the great encompassment, the great perfection. Take away all the context, and you go from the great perfection to a rodent. Really, it's marmot. And so no wonder so many people like, you know, oh, I like the open presence. It's so much easier than Vipassana, so much easier than the four measurables, much, much easier than shamatha. I like this. Well, of course you like it, it's easy. So, there we are. So let's practice from the ground up, so that they are not only great practices and deep practices, they're great practitioners and deep practitioners. Okay?